behind the screen. There's a world of pure imagination behind the screen. There's a
no, we didn't really start. I just start in case I catch any
gold.
Yeah. All right, so everybody knows what we're doing?
A podcast or some kind.
Something. All right. Hi, everybody. This is Paul Goebel, and we're doing like a podcast or something?
That doesn't sound right.
So what would you call it?
I guess like a podcast.
Something like that.
What would you call it?
This is episode 251. So we've done 250 somethings.
Yeah.
Shows of some sort.
Yeah. We should figure that out at some point.
Fuck. I don't know. Why bother? We haven't. I mean, we've done 250. Clearly, we don't know what we're doing. So why bother now? Or maybe we do know what we're doing. We don't want to change it.
Yeah.
Right?
Hey, if it ain't good, don't fix it.
If it ain't working, why bother now, is what I always say. Case in point, my marriage, my kids, my career. I'm Paul Goebel, and this is the Paul Goebel Show. You're listening to it with my best friend and co-host, Jim Bruce.
Hey, everybody. I'm also here.
And his best friend and co-host, Tom Griffin.
Hello.
And our guest today is famous in the nerd world. We're going to be talking about a lot of nerd-related stuff. Returning to the show, Mr. Tom Frank is here.
Thank you. It's great to return.
Thanks for coming back. And now, Tom, this is your first visit to my house where you, last time we were at Jim's house, and now you're here at my house where you got to see all my collection of nerd-related material and action figures and stuff. What is your basic reaction? And don't sugarcoat it. Don't be nice just because it's my house and you want to defer to the king and blah, blah, blah. You're a guy, you're an expert. Even all my stuff that I have is probably not worth like your most expensive action figure. So what is your general reaction to all my stuff?
That you love TV. not that you love collecting or that, I wouldn't guess that, you know, versions matter a lot to you as much as the character itself.
Right. And
what it represents.
Right.
You know, it's more expansive than, a collection that's the result of hunting down crown jewels for years.
More expansive than expensive.
Yes.
Ah, mm-hmm. Right? Well, actually, yeah, I do pride myself on finding things that I think are cool and also relatively inexpensive. Like all the Buffy and Angel stuff, none of it was ever in the case. Well, I'm sure it was at some point, but when I got it, they were all loose. Mm-hmm. So of course, it's always cheaper to buy things that are loose because they're not worth as much. But in my opinion, I think that's cooler because I can then display them however I want. Mm-hmm. And see, it's all like a little menagerie of shit there. And I got, you know, Anyanka and Anya. I got, mm-hmm. you know, Spike the Vampire and Spike the Dude, mm-hmm. you know, so stuff like that.
And you include all your Star Trek figures in your menagerie.
In the menagerie.
Huh? Right? Huh? Double meaning.
And like these are all from Burger King. I'm sure you know, you recognize them from mm-hmm. Burger King. And so obviously those are really cheap. They're not like part of a collection, so to speak. But
you'll pay in the early stroke in your 50s.
But who knows, years from now when they've rebooted Star Trek for a third time, you know, someone might go, oh, look at this Chris Pine Kirk. That's weird that you have an old Chris Pine doll, you know.
Before and he then, went crazy. And
do you know right? about third-party grading?
No. What is that?
What you do is you take a collectible and you send it off to some place, and they grade it independently. You know, it's not the person who sold it. It's not the person who buys it.
Right.
It's a third party, and then they encase it in plastic and assign an official grade to it. You know, like 10 would be a perfect condition item. And they mm-hmm. do that. That's a big impact on collectibles and comic books
right.
and coins. But it's also with toys. And a lot of people think that it's gone too far. There are instances now where a third-party graded loose toy will command more money than a carded toy, a carded action figure, which is insane.
That does seem silly.
Obviously, the carded figure, you know, the toy that's inside the unopened card has to be in perfect condition.
Right.
But just because of the credibility of the third-party grading, people are willing to pay more for that.
That's interesting. Because, some of these are in great condition other than the dust. They're out of the sun. You know, You know, they haven't faded or anything. They haven't been drawn on, you know, or anything like that.
That reminds me, I meant to draw on your toys.
Why would you do that?
Well, I'm glad you reminded
that me. That happened is Lunchbox got drawn on by Henry Winkler.
Ah, what an asshole. I was like,
yeah, why did you fucking do
that? Nicest guy in Hollywood, my ass.
Right? What a
drew
dick.
On your... Oh, wait, you asked him to do that, though, right?
Well, I asked him to sign it. I didn't ask him to write, "Yes, you are cool." What kind of a dick would write something like that?
Yeah, although that's really... I mean, he was Fonzie.
Yeah.
What sort of lessons is he imparting to Hank Zipper?
Zipser. And I have the Fonzie's word search, and inside it he wrote, "I can't do any of these," because he has the problem with the letters. All right, let's talk about today's episode. Is all nerd-related material for the most part. We're going to get deep into it because the four of us are all different degrees of nerds. Let's start off strong with the Green Lantern. We all saw the Green Lantern at some point last week, right? Tom and I just saw it last night. Now, I saw it in 3D. Tom?
I did not.
Okay, I'm the only one who saw it in 3D. And I'll say this. I'll just say, you know, I kind
so
of...
We can't comment on that extra dimension.
No. You guys, 2D only.
We'll have to take 2D comments.
You can talk 2D comments, Natalie, Blair, all those. I, 3D only. I thought, because Brooke was saying, I only really care about seeing... animated films in 3D, like Toy Story or the Christmas Carol that came out with Jim Carrey over the Christmas, which I thought was the 3D was kind of cool. But I thought, well, this movie is almost all animated anyways, with all the fucking special effects, so let's see it in 3D. And in some cases, it was pretty cool, I thought. The constructs and all the space stuff, and I was like, yeah, it did make a difference to me, as opposed to the Green Hornet, which I saw in 3D, which was a waste of time and money. Or something else I saw in 3D. Like Drive Angry. Who the fuck's going to see Drive Angry in 3D?
Yeah.
I mean,
who's going to see Drive Angry?
Period, right? Yeah. But then I say, I got to see it in 3D.
I guess Clash of the Titans would be the ultimate example, because it wasn't intentionally filmed in being in 3D. They decided, hey, we'll make more money off of this, you know, right? Piece of crap.
As opposed to that new one that's coming out with Mickey Rourke. They keep advertising. I mean, it looks really cool. It's about, I don't know, some dude with a wacky bow. But that looks really cool, and it's supposed to be in 3D. It's like the next 300 is what it is.
Right.
So that one looks kind of cool.
It's a 600.
301.
301,
yeah.
And the last one's a Dalmatian.
Yeah.
Right. That's adorable.
But so I thought the 3D did add something to it. Now, my opinion is, I didn't hate it. I thought some parts of
my
it were kind of cool.
My opinion is you did.
No, you're wrong, though.
But it's just
it's your opinion.
But...
Sure, I respect your opinion. But I've seen
Tom,
worse.
What do you think, Paul, thought of that?
I've seen worse superhero movies, specifically Thor, which I did not enjoy at all. Green Hornet, which I thought was terrible.
Wrong.
I know you guys think
absolutely
I'm wrong.
So
you think Green Hornet was better than Green Lantern?
Yeah, I enjoyed it more.
Tom?
Yeah.
What about you, Tom Frank?
Green Hornet worse.
Okay. So we're on the same page as that. All right, but...
you guys are going to warm up to it when you see it on cable once, and you go, you know what? I don't know what I was thinking, because it's a fun, fun movie.
Well, I'll say this about Green Lantern.
All right, let's talk about the movie we just saw.
My problem is... I mean, I don't have a lot of problems with the movie, partly because I was never... You know, my relationship with superheroes and shit like that doesn't come from comic books.
It comes from secretly being one.
I'm not a comic book guy. It's more of, you know, like when I see Batman, I, you know, relate it to the show and the cartoons and the other movies, and same with Thor and shit like that. But there's never been a Green Lantern TV show or a Green Lantern cartoon on TV.
I think he showed up in, like, a live action...
Right, that shitty NBC thing.
Right.
They showed a clip of it on Conan O'Brien last week, where he fought Charlie Callis, just as a gypsy. And that was funny. But that was supposed to be a comedy. And, you know, and he was, of course, on Justice League, as Jon Stewart on Justice League. And
Justice League Unlimited. He was awesome. Yeah.
Right, it was very cool. And then in the original Challenge of the Super Friends, he was in a few episodes, you know, just doing cheesy stuff like that, but never like, you know, the Fox or the WB Batman and Superman, which were really good. So nothing strong. And then there was never any Green Lantern Corps stuff on TV or in the movies or any of that. So this is all brand new. So I didn't really have anything to compare it to. You know, even when they're showing all the Green Lantern Corps, you know, people, I'm sure... hardcore fans went, oh, that's that guy, and there's that guy, and there's that lady, and there's that B guy, and I recognized some of them, but I didn't know their names. So, for the most part, I just thought, ah, this is kind of cool, and there's Sinestro, and can't wait for him to put on that yellow ring, which I know he's going to do. Although, now, correct me if I'm wrong, is that retcon that Sinestro eventually turned evil? Like, when he was introduced, he was just, hey, here's Green Lantern's nemesis, and his name is Sinestro.
No, he was a Green Lantern that turned evil, but he turned evil pretty early, so...
So, but not like immediately.
I thought Sinestro was easily the best thing in the movie.
He was pretty good. And the guy, yeah, what's his name, Mark Strong?
Yes.
The guy who played him?
Amazing performance.
Very good,
but it's the sort of thing where it's interesting because the audience knows more about him than he does. Like, it's not like Palpatine at the beginning of The Phantom Menace, who's already got this evil plot set in motion. Mm-hmm. Sinestro is a villain who doesn't know that he's a villain yet.
And even when he puts on the ring, he thinks he's doing the right thing.
Yes, he has a set of internal values that he's adhering to.
Yeah, and even me, who never, I don't think I've ever read one Green Lantern comic, I knew exactly who he was and what his deal was. So I think that's a disadvantage to the movie.
I mean, you know, throughout the whole movie, Hal Jordan spends most of his time whining. You know? And Sinestro doesn't whine for one second. And when he's slamming Hal Jordan, saying you're not good enough, he's right.
Yeah.
You know, no one can disagree with that. And the main fault that he has with Hal Jordan is he's not as good as the Green Lantern that Hal Jordan is replacing, who's his good friend.
Right.
Which is totally, not out of line.
And who was the hero,
and
apparently.
And, like a good guy, he came around when Hal Jordan came around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he did the right thing. He said, well, good job, Hal Jordan. You beat Parallax. You know what I heard is that in the next movie, Parallax will return, just not be as strong. They call him X-Parallax. That's what I heard.
That's what you heard?
I heard they're going to do that.
Yeah, okay.
Did you hear that?
No.
No? Did you hear that, you guys?
I don't think I heard that.
No? I may have misheard it. Now, what did you think of the movie, Tom?
I liked it, but I am... I was predisposed to like it because I am a Green Lantern fan, and so I'm not sure. I'm not sure how reliable my opinion is. I thought I had some third act problems. I thought the plot breaks down a little towards the end, where stuff just starts happening.
And so does the script when he has to repeat, "The bigger you are, the harder the pull." Yes, we fucking get it.
Yeah,
when you're racing towards the sun, we saw this coming a mile away. A
lot of screenwriting 101, I think.
Without a doubt, yes. I will say, and it's funny, because like Brooke brought up the constructs. You know, obviously all the constructs are deliberate and specific. You know, he makes a catapult, he makes a big Gatling gun. All the shit they make throughout the whole movie, all of them, you know, the race car and all that stuff. It's very specific, but it's like, okay, why didn't you, instead, you know, when the helicopter was coming, why didn't you make a blob that was soft? For the helicopter to fall into. Didn't have to be a race car that raced all over the place.
It seems like kids with active imaginations would be good Green Lanterns in that.
Right?
You know who you want? You want, Billy Mummy in the Twilight Zone episode. He would be a good imaginative.
Sure.
Do you think that was actually kind of the Justice League Unlimited, or Justice League Unlimited's innovation to the Green Lantern thing was actually saying, let's actually strip this down. You've got this ring that can do anything, and it's neat when you make a giant... boxing glove and hit somebody with it, but you could just shoot a laser at them.
Right. It could be a gun.
And that's what they did in the cartoon with Jon Stewart, was they said, okay, our version of Jon Stewart is going to be a very practical guy, so we're going to strip this down a lot. And he's just going to make force fields and lasers.
Right. When he flies out to space, he's not going to make himself a rocket ship. He's just going to be a force field.
So then I think what you'd probably say is that's a product of Hal Jordan's personality, right?
Well, I think they tried to explain that when his nerd buddy showed up and said, race car.
In general, he thinks, and if that's, probably it's also, since you've created a guy who seems somewhat impulsive, it's like, what the fuck, a race car, and then that's the thing
he
does.
I thought he set that up from his nephew's race car set.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. He likes race cars. But I think,
is that even believable that a guy would like race cars?
A guy who drives a race car would like race cars and flies
who
planes?
Likes race cars? I mean, other than everybody who is around ever.
Other than people.
I mean, the movie is a little silly, and it seems even
silly. You're silly.
If you're a big Green Lantern fan.
Calm
I mean,
down.
You're talking about the Justice League Unlimited Jon Stewart Green Lantern, which was so serious and has this really deep, interesting love triangle between Vixen and Hawkgirl.
Right.
And right. It was just so adult, and this is like kind of
and it wasn't yeah. in Justice League Unlimited where he eventually had a kid. They showed in the future when they went to right. the future, he had yep. a son
yo,
that was
yo.
Hot Girl's daughter, son as well. So
mm-hmm. I feel like Green Lantern as a franchise though has a fair amount of Silver Age silliness kind of baked into it. So I mm-hmm. allow some of that. Like a lot of the stuff that Geoff Johns introduced when he rebooted the franchise, mm-hmm. Stuff like Parallax, the infamous Yellow Fear Monster, the fans called it, and whatnot. There was a lot of resistance to a lot of what he did, but a lot of it made sense to me in a Silver Age way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it also seems there's such, unlike other superheroes, there's such a capacity for that. When you say there's a Green Lantern Corps, and there's over 3,000, there's 3,500 separate Green Lanterns, and they can be anything we want. One can be a giant ball, one can be a fish, one can be a wasp. I mean, why not fucking be crazy? Why not make one of them a gaseous entity? So, you know,
yeah, but even
think outside the box.
Even just with the, you
or
know,
make
the,
a green box.
Yeah, you can make
why
a green
can't
box.
One of them be a box?
Yeah, well,
on the box,
box
planet.
Yeah.
Right? The planet where everyone's a box, one right, of the Green yeah. Lanterns is a box.
Naturally,
cuz that makes
if,
perfect
if
sense.
You're going to choose a Green Lantern from that planet. It would have to be a box, but
unfortunately, every construct he makes is a box because that's their only
think
frame
outside of
reference.
It.
Exactly, it's his only.
I remember
frame of different shapes of boxes.
Guy
but
kept
still.
Hitting me with a box
when the first episode of Deep Space Nine came on. You've got Odo, is that his name?
Uh-huh.
That's right.
And in the pilot episode, he like sneaks into somewhere by turning into like a suitcase or something. And that's the first thing you do, and I was, you know, cracking my friends up, speculating that this guy is so powerful, he can turn himself into any type of luggage.
A suitcase, a handbag, a garment bag, this fucking guy,
Samsonite
overnight
Pullman,
bag.
You know?
Anything. He can turn into one of those tiny bottles.
A wicker basket? No, don't be silly. Come on.
No,
we're
talking serious.
Even in the, just the mechanics of how the power works, it's very, very broad, the Green Lantern power.
Right.
A lot of weird things have been done with it in the books over the years, and they keep changing the story about exactly how it works. So there's always been a fair amount of silliness in the franchise, I think.
Yeah, but you can also, like you're saying with Jon Stewart, you know, make it more serious.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on the spirit of the time as it is.
Well, I would hope that, you know, in time, I mean, unlike other superheroes, there's only been one Batman, there's only been one Superman. There's been a lot of Green Lanterns, and even on Earth, there's been quite a few. And they're all very different. And, I mean, I would think the true fan of the comic book wants to see, Guy Gardner. And mm-hmm. wants to see Jon Stewart. And maybe even wants to see Kyle Rayner.
Oh, there's a lot of fans that want to see Kyle Rayner.
So there you go. And they're all very... I mean, I read that... again, I don't know a lot about Green Lantern, but in this, you know, the Parallax graphic novel I read...
I suspect for the movies, you're just going to see Hal Jordan.
Who knows,
right?
though? I mean, at least maybe... why not even a cameo by one of those guys who's not the Green Lantern yet?
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that's... Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a cameo, it makes sense. But, like, if you start introducing multiple Green Lanterns, I think you start going down the path of, like, Spider-Man 3. And
well, yeah.
Spider-Man 3 happened, you know.
That's what I'm saying.
I know, but...
So, who says it's not going to happen now, with Green Lantern?
I'm saying it's not advisable, is what I'm saying.
Now,
okay.
For just... For good eye, did you catch the Stan Lee? Did you see him?
No, he wasn't in it. I looked for him, but he wasn't in it.
He was Green Lantern.
Here's my
no, that
theory.
Was Ryan Reynolds.
Damn it, I thought it was Stan Lee.
Did you say that after you saw the movie?
Yeah.
To Tom?
Of course.
Dick.
I just picture, like, geek guys taking dates to see Green Lantern, and the date, like, trying to be supportive of their geek boyfriend and saying, let's stay through the closing credits so we can see how Green Lantern figures into the Avengers. A
nice.
For effort.
Well, and I will say it was nice of them to show the coda before the credits. It was after the movie, but before the credits with him putting on the ring.
Now, let me ask you this. This is what I said to
sorry,
Tom.
Spoilers.
This is what I said to Tom. Don't you think it would have been better... And I think that this is, again, taking a little bit of more time with the script. I think it would have been better to have shown him looking at the ring.
And not putting it on and going, oh.
Yes.
Like some queer. Oh, did anybody else
like
feel that?
Quite how I remember.
Oh, this ring makes me feel all, I don't know.
My precious.
Naughty. Yeah, it's like Gollum. Oh.
I wish he would have just looked at the ring because here's my problem with that particular decision. I understand that he's going to do that because he feels he needs to. He didn't need to at that moment.
No, he was just like, let's see what happens.
There was no pressing reason to do it. We have already defeated Parallax. We know that everything is more or less right with the world. So while this tantalizing power is out there, it seems to me that there should be a nice, solid motivation of, oh, crap, here comes some stuff.
And also, in the next movie, you know, I've always said this. I hate when movies set up the sequel before they have finished making the first movie. Yeah. I hated the fact that Billy Dee Williams was Harvey Dent because, A, he wasn't Two-Face, he was only Harvey Dent, and B, I knew he was never going to be Two-Face. I knew they would never let him be Two-Face, and that was bullshit because he would have been the best Two-Face ever.
That was Two-Faced of them.
That was very Two-Face. And also, like, the Shadow. There was so much shit in the Shadow that they set up for the Shadow 2 that, unfortunately, they forgot. And the Shadow ended up being a shitty movie, and there never was a Shadow 2. And I hate that.
Now, who knows what would have been in it now?
Well, maybe one dude knows.
There was a thing with the Incredibles comic book, where they sort of continued the continuity from the movie, and it was like Boom Studios had it, and in the 15th issue, it's revealed that this mastermind criminal named Zurich has been foiling the Incredibles by using information gotten from the disembodied brain of Everseer, who was the third super to be destroyed in the Omnidroid process.
All right.
And it's just like, oh, wow, this is like a good cliffhanger sort of ending.
That is cool.
And then Disney buys Marvel. Marvel absorbs Pixar properties. Boom Studios can't continue the storyline. So it's just left hanging.
So it's dumb.
In a big cliffhanger sort
and
of way.
Do they even make an Incredibles comic book anymore?
No, they stopped. I mean, Boom Studios just says, yeah, you know, I wrote to Boom Studios about it, and they said, yeah, we just hope Marvel continues. And you know they won't, because there's no Incredibles 2 coming out. You know, they're going to just make Cars 2.
They've wrapped comic up. Books. Oh, which, ooh, boy, who's excited for that?
Who? A ton of money, wow.
Yeah, well, retarded kids are, yes.
Not retarded kids, kids.
Yeah, kids, but I'm saying all kids are retarded. When you say kids, you might as well say retarded kids.
Oh, Jesus, what happened? That is awful. Wow. When did that happen?
Beef growth hormone.
Tell me what's happening. Jenny McCarthy, what's happening?
She's going to stop it all. I'm interested. I want to see them do... Because there wasn't, unlike the Avengers and movies and all that, there wasn't a lot of, like, you know, Easter eggs and shit like that, and like, here's a guy who will be in the next movie, or here's, you know, Stan Lee, or any shit like that. Because they could have easily said, you know, oh, yeah, it's my friend Guy Gardner, or, you know, because I don't know what those guys did for a living in the comics, but they could have put a guy with a bowl haircut. I mean, they wouldn't even have to say his name. Just some red-haired guy with a bowl haircut in a scene. Everyone would went,
I generally like stuff like that.
I do, too.
There's some little touches here and there, like Carol Ferris's flight name was Sapphire.
And what does that mean? I don't get it.
Her supervillain identity is Star Sapphire.
Oh, okay.
When she gets possessed by the crazy space energy, she's Star Sapphire.
Got it.
And you mentioned earlier, a lot of the Green Lanterns you see in some of those crowd scenes are recognizable characters. There are characters that you will recognize. If you're a Green Lantern fan, you will recognize, hey, there's the crazy robot Green Lantern. And
right. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Green Lantern had two kids... Jade and Obsidian or something like that?
That's...
Or is that Alan Scott?
What, they can turn it into water or something?
No, it's Zan and Jaina.
Oh, okay.
that's the Golden Age Green Lantern.
That's only tangentially related to Green Lantern proper.
They're pretty much just two different... They're just two different guys that have nothing to do with each other except... Because if I remember correctly, even the Golden Age Green Lantern said, yeah, my ring works on magic. It's a whole different deal.
Yeah, there's if you really want to get into the nitty gritty of it, which we won't now, there is a tangential a connection between the Golden Age Green Lantern and the Green Lantern Corps, but it's
okay.
He's not a member of the Corps,
right?
He's got a different origin.
Now, have you guys given any thought to who you'd like to see play other Green Lanterns? Because I will say Ryan Reynolds is my favorite actor, but I think he was fine.
If they bring in Guy Gardner, I would like is it Dominic Purcell is his name from Prison Break?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah?
That's my Guy Gardner.
Oh, I like that. Give him a crazy red wig and he'll be an asshole to everybody. I like that.
Yeah, I've thought that for a while.
What about Jon Stewart? You know, I have an idea.
Jon Stewart?
Yeah. Don't you think he'd be good as Jon Stewart?
I was going for Colbert.
Really? You think Stephen Colbert would be good as Jon Stewart?
Jon Stewart. but on The Daily Show.
No, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Craig Kilborn. Yeah.
Craig Kilborn, that's who plays Jon Stewart.
That would be
Did you guys see...
Kilborn should be Guy Gardner.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but was it Isaiah Mustafa said he wanted to be Power Man? Did you guys see any of this?
No.
The Old Spice guy? Isaiah Mustafa's the Old Spice guy? And I guess he made a video of himself, like, working out and punching the shit out of stuff. And was like, hey, if there's ever a Power Man movie, check me out.
I would love a Power Man movie. That character is so... Nobody gives a crap. Power Man and Iron Fist...
He's actually quite popular.
Is he?
Yeah.
Because I think even if the character's not popular, it would make a great movie. Power Man and Iron Fist...
Well, correct me if I'm wrong,
Heroes for Hire? That's great.
Isn't Power Man kind of dated? Wasn't he invented in the 70s to be a black... Basically be a black superhero?
Yeah.
Yeah, but so?
But... Right. The fact that
black people are still around.
There weren't a lot a lot of black superheroes for people to glom onto, and the black readership liked that character. And he's been brought back. He's a big part of the Marvel universe right now.
And it was never insulting.
They smoothed out a lot of the blaxploitation stuff.
So. But he still wears a chain as a headband.
No, he doesn't.
He wears it as a belt.
Okay, it's a big difference.
But that was a great comic.
Yeah, but only after he teamed up with Power Man. Or Iron Fist,
yeah.
Right?
They were a good team, yeah.
Do you know that 311 song? It's like this sappy, romantic thing. Amber is the color of your energy. It's like,
I know that song.
I always viewed that as like a homosexual love song between Power Man to Iron Fist.
Wow.
That's nice.
So I guess overall we enjoyed the movie and we're ready for the whole thing to go on and see another one in a series of Green Lantern movies.
I'd be fine seeing another Green Lantern movie, yes.
Now what, I'm not familiar with the Green Lantern, do you think the next one will be Sinestro? Here's what I'll say about Sinestro. The biggest mistake, I think, in him putting on the ring at the end of the movie is we won't get to see what happens. The next movie will be... Oh my God, Sinestro's been wreaking havoc for the past 3 years. We need to stop him.
It doesn't have to be. What it could be is it could be a movie that takes place right away in the timeline. That's the way that they could do that. And it could also be...
Like Halloween 2.
Yeah. And it could...
Wait, oh yeah, I was thinking Halloween 3, but yeah, Halloween 2.
And I guess... I mean, I don't know,
Halloween was followed by Halloween, too.
Tom, tell me, when he puts on the... Tom, in the comic book, when he turns by putting on the bad ring, does he immediately become a bad guy, or does he, for a little while, hold on to...
What happens in the comic is that he's a Green Lantern, and he's considered one of the best Green Lanterns, but the power goes to his head. He basically makes himself, like, emperor of his homeworld. And then they find out the Guardians and everybody find out what he's been up to, and they're like, you've been abusing your power. We're going to kick you out of the core now. And then he went off and found some guys who made him a yellow ring.
Okay, well...
And then he started his own core, correct, of yellow guys?
Eventually, but that was very recent.
So what the story could be something along the lines of at the very beginning, as far as our Green Lantern is concerned, Sinestro's still a good guy, and that could be part of the... His will know as the audience, but that could be how the story
goes. If they're smart, and you know, who knows if they will be, they'll do with Sinestro what they did with Ra's al Ghul, whereas he's not the immediate threat. He's more the bigger threat who simply can't be beaten and forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the next movie, Sinestro will be around, and he'll even be a bad guy, but he won't be the immediate threat, correct me if I'm wrong, but Sinestro's the villain you want to keep around for a while, right? Mm-hmm. Unlike in the shitty Batman where they killed the Joker at the end, you know, you want to keep the Joker around for a while. He is Batman's
The more Sinestro you've got in the next movie, the better. As I said, I think he's the best thing in the movie. Sinestro, you know, what you're talking about, like tone... You know, this is a little silly, and it's, you know, Green Lantern's the sort of thing where you can adjust to the times. You know, when you want a more dark, stoic hero, he can fulfill that as well. He can also be pretty silly. And, you know, that's also true with Batman, and it's worth stopping and talking about how incredible The Brave and the Bold is. And
I love that show.
It's so, like, Batman is not out of character there, even though he's going into outer space and other dimensions and teaming up with Detective Chimp.
And Batmite.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And, you know, it's easy for fanboys to, you know, think that everything needs to be dark and serious all the time, like The Dark Knight, and that's, you know, simply not the case. And the Green Lantern episodes of The Brave and the Bold are wonderful. There's, what is it, the Despero, you know, and Batman shows up on, you know, Green Lantern spaceship, and there's a bunch of Green Lanterns there. The only one he trusts is Sinestro.
And, yeah.
You know.
And there's the little raccoon one.
Yes.
I love that guy. Yeah, you're right. It's a great cartoon. It's sad they're not going to make any more of them. That's a fucking crime, if you ask me. I don't know why. I guess because they can rerun the ones they have and people still watch them.
You know, it's the sort of thing. It wasn't canceled after 18 episodes. There have been several seasons of them. You know, it's been great. It's been very consistent.
Those sort of decisions almost always, with cartoons, almost just always come down to economics. There's a number on a spreadsheet, and when they hit the right number of episodes to read that the balance sheet hits the right number, then the show's canceled.
Right, yeah, and also, and I'm sure that eventually, like all animated shows, eventually everybody involved goes, we're doing pretty good, can we have a raise? And the network goes, no, in fact, you're all fired, because we got another show coming in that will work for half of what you're asking. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big, you know, the economics of rebooting are really crucial to what's going on with all of these series. You know, you look at people, you know, the Spider-Man reboot, it's just like, the main benefit from that is you don't have to pay Tobey Maguire again. You don't have to pay, and they're getting nothing.
None of them. No, you're right. That's probably my least favorite cartoon spinoff, The Economics of Reboot. Remember that show? Yeah. I mean, you watch Reboot and go, this is great. And then afterwards, it was like him and the kids just sitting around balancing their fucking budgets.
Right. Well, here's a rumor that I had heard that maybe...
Because it turned out that's the computer was actually in an accounting office. And once they got all the viruses out of it, that it was just work.
Wasn't that part of the Dexter Riley trilogy?
Oh, the computer who wore tennis shoes and all those guys?
The computer rebooted the Spider-Man.
Wow, yes. Nice reference. Holy shit.
I heard with like Lizzie McGuire that was a show that was doing well, and when the movie came out, based on what it cost to make, it was, you know, considered profitable and a moneymaker for them. But and when it came to, you know, the TV series was still going on, when it was time to renegotiate Hillary Duff's contract, you know, her representation asked for what she was worth based on, you know, the numbers, and they just said, nope, you know what, let's just cancel it.
Yeah, I think it was, and this was, like, they wouldn't have done that today, but back in the, it was a Disney show, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, Disney was like, we don't pay that kind of money for shows. We just don't do it. So, sorry, we're going to move on. They would pay, these days, they would pay Miley Cyrus whatever she asked for if she wanted to continue doing the show, you know, as long as it wasn't exorbitant, because they know what branding is about. But back then, they were just, they owned Hillary Duff and made stars, and they would go, sorry, it's like in the early days of Comedy Central, you know, maybe you have a great show, and they're like, yeah, that's great, but unfortunately, that's not the money here. We don't pay for that kind of show.
Yeah, I first started watching Comedy Central, and they used to play that show Stripes all the time.
Yeah, remember that show?
And they only made like one episode.
Long episode.
Logan loved it,
funny
though.
Funny as shit.
Well, John Candy, I don't know, he must have just been... It was because he was an SCTV Canadian actor. You pay him nothing.
Yes. All right, well, let's... I think we've talked the Green Lantern to death. Let's move on to this Ryan Dunn.
That'll be
thing.
About the next movie.
What, Green Lantern to death?
Because some guy talks him to death, yeah.
Oh, so they're casting you?
Yep, congrats.
As the new villain?
Yeah.
You're congratulating yourself. Now, here's my question. Which movie do you guys want to see? Horrible Bosses or Bad Teacher?
Horrible Bosses.
But they're both going to be terrible movies. It's Horrible Bosses and Bad Teacher.
Oh, is Terrible Movie out too?
Yes, Terrible Movie is coming out afterwards, which is just a repackaging of Scary Movie.
I've been wanting to see Bad Teacher. That looks fun.
All right, now, I wasn't going to get into this, but we already brought it up. So let me ask you, and again, this is... Knowing that none of us have seen the movie, if you're being sexually harassed by a boss who looks like Jennifer Aniston...
You might be a redneck?
Do you really have a problem with it, dudes in this room? I say most dudes do not, unless you're gay and you say, look, I don't like women, or, you know, you're in a committed relationship where, you know, you feel so fucking guilty cheating on this woman, you know, because she's like an angel and you can't ever do anything to hurt her. Or you're afraid of the woman who you're in a committed relationship with, because if she finds out you cheat, she will kill you or take all your belongings and your kids. Other than those extreme situations, there is no man in his right mind who will not say, okay, fine, let's go ahead and have sex, because that's going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. First of all, and then
because
once
you're
it's
Jennifer Aniston,
because you're, oh, because you look like Jennifer Aniston,
okay, fair
because
enough.
She's not Jennifer Aniston, but because you look like Jennifer Aniston, you're crazy hot, and because once we have sex,
looks like Rachel.
First of all, while we're having sex, there will be no sexual harassment because I'm the stronger of the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, once we do have the sexual harassment will stop because you will no longer be able to harass me because I've already had sex with you. And I can say, forget it. We've had sex. And this whole thing is done with now because it's no longer, an unheard of thing. It's no longer in the ether. It's actually been said and done. But you guys, some married, some single, some both. What is your reaction if you're working for a woman who looks like Jennifer Aniston and she constantly is grabbing you and wants to have sex with you?
Well, here's possibly why a person might object. I'm imagining. Because obviously if it's me and she doesn't look like Jennifer Aniston, it's probably fine.
Right.
But, if it looks like Edward James Olmos, I'm probably like, well, shit, it's a good job.
Ooh, wow.
No, but here's possibly what it is it's the, first of all, you are, as my boss, putting me in a position I don't want to be put in.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do have sex with you, maybe I am losing my career because I don't know what other kind of fucked up games you're playing with me.
As a dental hygienist, you're losing your career as a dental hygienist?
They make good money.
Yeah, you got to go to, college.
No.
On the computer.
Well, college. You have to go to Phoenix College.
But I don't know. Maybe it's, I can see lot of people reacting.
If you lose that job, you might have to go into gun repair.
Yeah.
Or high school diploma.
I don't know. If somebody's playing games with you, a lot of people don't like having games played with them, I assume.
Okay. Tom, you're a single dude.
In a professional environment, there is a set of expectations about how a person should behave.
Mm-hmm.
If someone violates those wildly, that's a good sign that there's probably something wrong with them.
Well, yeah, clearly.
So
you're saying, in your case, it would turn you off so much because she's clearly nuts. So
yeah.
You wouldn't even want to have sex
with
her.
Yes, I would distrust her.
Because you'd be like, you know what, it might be good to have sex with her, but she also might stab me in the middle of it. Like a pull of basic instinct.
Yeah, and also your assertion that, well, once you have sex, it's all done with. I don't think that's probably true. Yeah.
Wasn't there that great scene in Austin Powers 2 where he has sex, Dr. Evil has sex with like one of his assistants, and then there's this hilarious, awkward moment like at the coffee maker afterwards where they're like, yeah, so, how's it been? It was either in Austin Powers 2 or 3. That was so hilarious to me.
Right. And that explained the sun, right? Because that was a time travel thing?
Right, because he had sex with, not Frau Fabrisna, but someone else, and that's how Scott Evil was born.
That's
maybe
right.
It was Frau Fabrisna.
I thought it was. Yeah,
okay, and that's how Scott was born, that's right. So, okay, Tom, what do you do in that situation?
Well, there's a bunch of things here. It's okay. Not like, oh, no, I don't want to have sex with my Jennifer Aniston-looking boss, and that
right.
would be awkward. What sort of relationship is he in outside of that?
Well, from what I read, he's engaged to a woman he is in very much in love with. That's what the character is, the deal. And he doesn't want to kill her until she shows him pictures that she has taken when she knocked him unconscious somehow and then, took pictures of them having sex. She having sex with his, unconscious body. And he's like, and instead of saying, this is fucked, quitting, going to the police and getting a lawyer, he instead says, all right, I'm on board. Let's kill him. Let's kill all our bosses.
Who are the other bosses?
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey.
Okay,
and
now
Colin.
Kevin Spacey, guy looking like Kevin Spacey, is it really that bad?
Yeah.
Oh, he's not even having sex with you.
No, none of them are. The other two aren't sexually harassing anyone.
Oh.
They're just. Now, here's the other thing I have a question about. It's clear to me that movie was written about two guys who have horrible bosses, and they decide, hey, let's crisscross and kill each other's boss. Mm-hmm. And someone at the studio went, Can we throw in a third guy to make it like The Hangover?
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that obvious what they did?
They had the strangers on a train thing going.
Right. And then someone went, well, The Hangover is really popular. Can we get a guy with a beard in there?
And what can we do with Jennifer Aniston? Yeah.
And Jason Sudeikis went, well, Charlie Day was pretty funny in that movie with me, you know, going the distance that nobody saw. All right. Sounds good. I mean, it's fucking clear.
I buy that development, you know.
That sounds like
narrative.
A fucking,
it's plausible.
It's exactly what happened. All right. Let's talk about Ryan Dunn, who just died, the Jackass guy. I mean, you know, there's a lot of shit being said about this, but I don't understand why there's so much controversy. The guy died the way he lived. He did a lot of crazy shit, and eventually it killed him. Now, this wasn't a Jackass stunt, but it was the way he lived his life. He was out drinking way too much. He got in a car. I'm positive this was not the first time he got behind a wheel while he was drunk, and he died because he was drinking and driving, and he was dead. Now, yes, it's sad whenever anyone dies, and I'm sure all his friends are sad. I understand why Bam Margera and Johnny Jackass are all sad, but why is the world at large so shocked and stunned by this development?
Are people shocked?
I think some people are like, "Oh, it's so sad. R.I.P. Ryan Dunn. Oh man."
Well, that's not the same
as fans.
Yeah,
his fans don't want him to be dead.
But my thing is, hooray, Ryan Dunn! You went out the way you wanted to go. You died the way you lived. He clearly, the guy had no fucking regard for his own life,
and he was self-destructive.
And he was self-destructive.
I see what you're saying, but at the same time, when there are people who are like, "Well," they didn't want him dead. As Tom said, they didn't want to see him dead. And they're sad for themselves, which is what grieving is. Grieving is you're not sad.
That's a good point.
Like, you're not sad for the person. Well, you know, in a way you are, but really you're not. Mostly you're sad for yourself not being able to see your loved one. Like, you know.
Not me.
if he had been...
You don't love anyone.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Let's say he had been, suddenly turned a new leaf and become less reckless and was less entertaining to his fans. It doesn't mean that he could have not had a life of happiness for another 50 years.
Right. You know? Okay.
I mean, who are we to judge, him if he decided to take better care of himself or people?
See, I think there's more, there's, you know, that's something more to be admired than going out. The way you going out the way you lived your life, but he clearly didn't choose that. He was never going to choose that.
Pretty clear he didn't choose that.
I mean, look at Johnny Knoxville. He'll still do, like, he went back to make the third Jackass movie, and when you run into him, he'll still do crazy shit sometimes, but, you know, he has a kid, and he's tried very hard to make a real career for himself as an actor and as a, you know, comic personality. And he's pretty responsible. He doesn't do that kind of nonsense anymore. And he's just as popular. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I don't know. But yes, it's in general, like, if Mel Gibson says something, some crazy-ass racist shit again, it's not like people are going to be surprised.
What did I miss?
Yeah, it's not like people are going to be surprised, but it'll still be a big deal, and it'll still be very disappointing, because every time something like that happens, like, it's a bummer.
Okay, well, now let's discuss the follow-up when, Roger Ebert tweeted, friends don't let jackasses drive drunk. Now, my feeling is, I don't know what his intent was, but if I see that tweet, I go, I agree with you. Friends don't let friends or jackasses or nephews or anyone drive drunk. That's not a cool thing to say. He was clearly making a point about Ryan Dunn. So I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, I know. He got hell.
And I think, but you're not one of Ryan Dunn's fans or loved ones. It's not that what he said is wrong or even inappropriate. It's just
insensitive.
That there were people at that moment that were in pain, and that doesn't help the people that were grieving.
But is it insensitive? I mean, fuck the people who are grieving.
That's pretty insensitive.
I think there's a point to be made about drunk driving.
I gotta say, you got up and said that at my dad's funeral, I did not like that.
Fuck what
fuck
did I say?
Fuck the people who are grieving?
Yeah, I was kind of a dick, I'll admit that.
Well, there weren't that many people there, and somebody had to talk.
Someone had to say something, right? I got sick of everybody just sitting around looking at each other. But, I mean, when a dude gets shit-faced, tweets a picture of himself shit-faced, and then gets behind a wheel of a car and kills himself, you know what? I don't have a lot of sensitivity for that. I'm sorry. And if I can, and if I can shift the attention to the fucking problem of young people drinking and driving and killing themselves, I would rather do that.
But the but in this Twitter world we live in,
yeah,
it's not just.
By the way, you don't live there.
It's not just the young people that are going to see your message,
right?
You know, Bam Margera is going to see it too.
And, so what?
But you can't tell Bam Margera not to be upset.
I can. I mean, but he has the right to be upset too. But he, and then when he goes on
but,
and
but,
says,
but that's the point is you have every right to say that, and you're not wrong. But that moment, Bam Margera is not thinking
okay,
clearly.
Okay, well, let's talk.
And he has every.
You have the right. You don't have the right to not expect to catch hell, right?
Yeah. Well, again, I think you know if people want to, you know, what is catching hell? People saying, "Wow, Roger Ebert, you're fucked." Here's the biggest problem I have is Perez Hilton, who said that it was inappropriate and it was too soon.
Nobody should ever listen to anything Perez Hilton says.
If a guy, and here's a quote that I looked up. Perez Hilton said, and I'm quoting, "I will push the envelope. I'm not afraid to be dangerous, whatever, because I can." Then who are you, end quote, then who are you to tell Roger Ebert that he went too far?
Yeah, no,
first of all, how are you in the first place? But when you admit that you go too far for a living, who are you to tell Roger Ebert he went too far?
It's pretty hypocritical of Perez Hilton to suddenly claim to
Perez
be the
Hilton
arbiter
does,
of good taste.
I think that's like fake edginess. I don't think.
No, I agree. I've never seen anything Perez Hilton did that I thought was edgy or interesting. But why in the world? I mean, that is the definition of hypocritical. Why in the world would he come out and say shit like that other than pandering, you know, horseshit?
Probably pandering.
And horseshit?
Well, yes. And you answered your own question because that's all that person does, right? That's all Perez Hilton does.
He stirs shit.
I think you're going to see...
There is nothing else to that.
Okay.
I think you're going to see an escalation in tolerance of tweets. I mean, I think that, you know, Roger Ebert, if he probably had like a week to, you know, have one data blast of information that he puts out, would not have written that. And I think more and more people are going to understand, you know, there was this whole... second-guessing yourself, you know what, or self-editing. Like, you know what, I'm not going to say that.
Right.
But with Twitter, you don't have that opportunity. That luxury is gone. And I think people get that. I think there is this growing understanding. People are going to say dumb shit on Twitter, and we are going to hold them less accountable than we might used to have. You know,
although,
stuff
you know what I would like from fucking Twitter, by the way? I would like from Twitter that there somehow you're only allowed to be on Twitter if you can write one sentence. But it's a real sentence. I'm amazed that people can't write anything at all. How can you not write one goddamn sentence?
Don't follow those people.
I'm not following them. You see them because you tangentially see them.
How?
Because if, like, say, somebody retweets something and you're like, and it's hashtagged, and you're like, oh, what's this? And you go to where all the hashtags
don't
are.
Don't do that. Don't go to where the hashtags are.
But you got
to
go there because there's also good stuff over there.
Because you're interested in the subject.
That was my favorite book as a child.
What?
Where the hashtags are.
All right, let's move on to...
Alcohol-related, I wanted to say that this story really quick because I think it's kind of funny. I read this article about Amy Winehouse. And the Amy Winehouse article was Amy Winehouse put on a great show because she's like, I'm trying to put the drinking behind me. And somebody said it was fantastic to see her at the top of her game and what a brilliant performer. And a half hour later, another article, Amy Winehouse booed off of stage with a liquor bottle. Like, oh, man, alcoholism is hilarious. That Isn't is a it? Tough disease.
Yeah, well, that's what you get. all right, let's do trivia because Tom is the comic book expert here, and I want to do a Green Lantern trivia question. We'll defer to Tom Frank, who will ask the trivia question. Last week, Jimmy Dore answered the question correctly, so no one got a chance to answer that. But Tom, you got a trivia question for the folks at home?
Sure. According to Green Lantern 143,
very specific,
in which. Darkseid's son, Graven, is Jokerized.
Okay. Wow.
And tries to become the most popular comedian in the universe. Whose show does he take over and go on in his place of? Sort of like, super villain Rupert Pupkin.
Got it. Okay, now, Tom was talking about this before the show, so we all know the answer. So if you, listening at home, know the answer, feel free to write me, Paul, at thekingoftv.com. And you will win a prize. We still have plenty of stickers to give away and porno paraphernalia to give away. And you can write me directly when you go to my site, thekingoftv.com, which is now live. The new kingoftv.com is live thanks to Dave Scheinholz. Dave Scheinholz! he did an excellent job. I'm so pleased with it.
Yeah, if you go brilliant.
There,
I like
there's
it.
My blog there and episodes of the podcast that you can listen to right there. And there's a link to Jim's website.
Same old trivia game.
Directly off there. Same,
which is
but
fine.
But he changed the graphics. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Changed the graphics of the trivia game, which are nice.
It is very cool.
A lot of great stuff. So thanks.
And thanks for the link.
And you can buy the bonus episodes right there on the front page, too, are now available. Bonus videos for the podcast, which we sell.
Your tweets are on the front, too. I encourage you, by the way, to tweet more often because people will love that.
Yeah, I got a lot of drunk stuff about Ryan Dunn I've been saving.
But if you can't get a sentence together, you might get some flack from this guy.
From this guy here, right? This one. Who has two thumbs and doesn't like bad tweets?
Me, no.
But you can buy the bonus videos. They're still available for 99 cents each, or you can buy 5 for $4 or 10 for $7. Tom Frank, how much would that be a piece?
I wasn't paying attention.
Good, that's good.
5 for $10?
Yeah.
$2 each.
There you go. If we sold them 5 for $10, it would be $2 each. You're absolutely right.
What? 99 cents each or 5 for 10?
$5 for $10.
I was like McDonald's gift certificates where they'd say 50 cents a piece or a book of 10 for $5.
Remember that? Yeah. Good deal. My parents used to buy those and like give me one. Like rip them out and give me one for Christmas, one for my birthday. Ah, good old days.
Wow.
Yep.
You were rolling deep.
Yeah. But you can buy all that shit, and you can also buy my CD right there on the front page, and it's a very cool site. So at the very least, go look at it, comment on the blogs, comment on stuff, give me your opinion on that. Speaking of trivia, I want to thank Jesse Whitehead, who has not answered any questions lately, but sent us a nice check. As a tip for the show, he sent a check for $5.
Thank you.
Gave us a tip, and he wrote in the memo for comedy.
Aww.
And I, of course, squeezed in a carrot there, so it said for gay comedy. So when he gets it back, people will know he paid for gay comedy, $5. I also want to thank Aaron Hobart. He's the guy who told me I should watch Game of Thrones because I had no intention of watching it. And he said, you really should check it out. I think you'll like it. And I watched it, and I fucking loved it. It was one of my favorite shows this summer, and I don't want to spoil it, but if anyone had told me a year ago that one of my favorite finales of any series would be a hot naked blonde chick with baby dragons crawling all over her, I would have told them they were fucking crazy. But it was the coolest thing I had seen all summer long. So I want to thank Aaron Hobart for that. Before we move on, let me tell a quick story. Last Sunday was Father's Day, and I mentioned that I and the children were going out to play miniature golf. So we're playing miniature golf, and my little youngest daughter, Gracie, is shitty. She's terrible. She doesn't even know how to hold a fucking club, and I'm trying to teach her. Stand in front of the ball, hold the club with two hands, and take your time, and she just doesn't get it. And I'm like losing my patience. I go, Gracie, stand in front of the ball. Don't stand to the side. Stand in front of it. Okay, now hold both, put the club with both hands. And I say to her, now address the ball. And I swear to Christ, she goes, hi there, ball. How are you? I swear to God she said that.
Did the classic.
I was so fucking happy. I couldn't have been prouder. It made the whole day worth it. The whole shitty Father's Day worth it. It was.
And then did
awesome.
She say goodnight, Gracie?
No, I was like, I just left. I threw my club down and left. I jumped into the pond. All right, let's, before we move on, as you know, we've been including Tom Frank's awesome But Let's Face It's on our show, and I figured because Tom is here this week, he would do a special one for us live in studio. you got one ready to go, Tom?
I think so. Which ones have you done already?
We did, we did We're Becoming Worse Geeks, I think was last week.
We're Becoming Worse Geeks or Geeks or Posers?
Let me see. I believe it was We're Becoming Worse Geeks was the one last year.
Idiots.
The one last week. And I know we did the Marvel.
Disney Buys Marvel.
Disney Buys Marvel. We definitely did that. Which is, I think that's the first one I ever saw you do at Comics and Comics. Explain to people what But Let's Face It is before we pick.
But Let's Face It came to me as sort of the most popular term on message boards that sort of imperious geeks would use. You know, in arguments back and forth, you know, they'd say, you know, but let's face it, and then blah, 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 say something that's incredibly opinionated as if it's law. So that was a term that I liked, and it's something that I wanted to incorporate as an opinion piece in, you know, the show that I do, Comics and Comics.
Okay, so yes, you're right. We did Both Geeks Are Posers and Marvel Buys Disney. So
those are the two. So I can do We're Becoming Worse Geeks.
Please do.
Yet to be done.
Yes, okay.
Geeks become geeks because we have to. Girls don't go out with us, we don't get invited to many parties, and we behave horribly at the parties we do get invited to by awkwardly forcing conversations toward the few things we're capable of talking about while an uninterested audience tries to find the host and ask why the hell we were invited. The internet would seem to be the perfect outlet for the geek. The web makes media consumption very, very efficient, and consuming media is what geeks do for a living. In many ways, the marriage between geeks and the internet has been a fruitful and happy one. But let's face it. Because of technology in general and the internet in particular, we are becoming worse geeks with each passing day. The web has afforded geeks the opportunity to be content creators, and to our detriment, we are taking them up on it. Geeks are now spending time shooting videos, recording podcasts, blogging, tweeting, and updating our stat eye. This all takes time, and the time we spend actually doing things is time that could be more wisely spent sitting in front of the television or playing Dungeons and Dragons in our parents' basements. There are two reasons why we are trying to be content creators. One is a very good reason, and one is a very bad reason. The very good reason is to correct other people. Misinformation presented by alleged geeks who have only a cursory understanding of the fanboy subject matter they discuss indeed should be put in their place. And you are just the guy to do it. The problem is there's too much of it. You could literally spend all your time correcting Wikipedia entries on Voltron or blogging about these factual errors. And while this is an admirable goal, you would clearly be better off catching up on episodes of Naruto or reading the newest issue of Iron Man. And you would be a better geek for doing so. The very bad reason geeks become online content creators is to try and make something of themselves. If you want to earn money so you can buy more comic books, video games, or toys, you should absolutely go for it. But your parents are right. You do need to get a real job. The market for online geek authorities simply has too long a tail. Too many of us are trying to do it, and there's really no money in it. Geekdom has far more to do with depth of knowledge than breadth. And like the warp core integrity of the Enterprise at the end of Star Trek II, this is being compromised. The internet is allowing for so much content that even the most dedicated of geeks can't keep up with it. We're learning less about more. And with iPhones, Google, and Wikipedia, we are able to fake it better. If something awesome comes out, we can't watch it or read it or listen to it 50 times like we used to, because we've got to move on and consume the next thing. Or, even worse, waste time blogging about it. In my day, when you got into an argument and bet someone $1 million over what the star date was for The City on the Edge of Tomorrow, it meant something. And you had to wait, sometimes for months, watching Channel 56 every night at 11 to see who was right. But you would do it, and when you were right, you lorded it over the inferior geek with more cockiness than any touchdown dance in history. Geek erudition dick-measuring contests are a good thing. Our vast reservoirs of arcane knowledge are kind of all we have. But like the spice mines of Kessel, these reservoirs are being depleted. I have no problem with Wikipedia and Google themselves. They are indeed powerful and practical tools for geeks.
It's just that we're not using them to search out new content to rigorously explore. Employing Wikipedia to find out every single Gundam TV series ever made so that you can watch each season in chronological order is a good geek use of the site. Reading the entry so that you can pretend to be a Gundam expert on some podcast appearance is not. The internet makes it so easy to fake being a geek that even girls are getting away with it. And not just average-looking girls. Hot girls who cosplay at conventions are now getting away with giving themselves the title of geek. Look, honey, having a body to pull off a Slave Leia costume doesn't make you a geek. Mm-hmm. I know when it comes to hot girls, we shouldn't give a shit, but we should. And the reason we don't test so-called geek girls and ask them how many tentacles a Dianoga has is because we no longer know ourselves. We are evolving into a world of geeks where the Emperor has no clothes. And that is a very chilling thought if you picture Palpatine. I know it seems like I'm being sanctimonious here, and I am. Because, let's face it, in the time it took me to write, record, upload, and share this monologue, I could have made a dent in my haven't-read pile, watched half a dozen episodes of the old Iron Man anime, downloaded an unsubtitled torrent of the new Ultraman Zero movie, and earned 10,000 experience points. But that doesn't mean that you have to make the same mistake. So instead of posting a long-winded blog entry about how the name of the Star Trek episode is actually The City on the Edge of Forever, log off and go read some comic books.
Brilliant. Well done, sir. I like that.
I could see you squirming in your chair as I got the title wrong.
That's so nice. I thought, he has to know that's wrong. Because I thought to myself, am I remembering it wrong? Because he can't be wrong. And I actually looked it up while you were saying it. And I went, okay, he'll have an explanation for this later on. Or they'll be held to pay. Yes. Now, that was awesome. Thanks. Good job. And if people want to read or hear more of these, where's the best place to go?
Comicsandcomics.net. New ones available each Monday.
Comicsandcomics.net is where you can read them. And then we'll have them on the show each week, too. So that's a good place. And there's a bunch of cool stuff there at comicsandcomics.net. For, like, you can see clips from the show and stuff like that. So that's where you go, and you can go there to reach Tom and learn all about his big robots. But you bring up a good point, and I wanted to bring this up with this whole everybody says they're geeks thing. If I see one more hot 20-year-old chick on a talk show go, oh, I'm such a total geek, oh, I'm a huge geek, I'm going to fucking shoot myself. What is it about, I mean, granted, being a geek and geekery has now, you know, reached, it's a great thing to do. It make, you know, Chris Hardwick has shown us it can be a huge cottage industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only, you know, his podcast has been around for what, a year or so? And already now he's, you know, he just shot his Nerdist pilot. Yeah. He's now hosting this 3 or 4 hour block on BBC America with these three shows, which I don't find very good. Did you watch Outcasts?
I've not seen Outcasts.
Oh, I fucking hated it. I honestly love Jamie Bamber, but I could not have liked this show any less. I thought it was terrible. You know, this the whole being a nerd thing, and you know, unfortunately, Chris Hardwick walks the walk. You know, and it's funny to me because I know Chris, obviously, and I know he really does like nerd-related shit. And not just that, not just like Doctor Who and Star Trek or whatever, but he likes science. And, you know,
and technology.
Yeah. And he is that guy. I remember I saw this one great tweet of his when the first iPhone, or when the iPad first came out. And he said, hey, why do people complain about how the iPad is nothing but a big iPhone? Don't you get a bigger TV every year?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's true, right? Doesn't that make perfect sense? We all want a bigger TV, so why don't we want a bigger iPhone? Yeah. That makes perfect sense. And you know what the worst feature of the iPhone is? The phone part. Get rid of that. Yeah. Who fucking needs it? I actually got a phone that works perfectly. So Chris, you know, so it's unlike a lot of times when people, like Olivia Munn is a perfect example. Yeah, maybe she likes geeky type shit, but she's just a hot girl. She doesn't know a lot about that. You know, Chris is the guy, and it's odd to think that the host of Singled Out, turned
into...
The dating show, which is, you know, for retards that people turned on to ogle at Jenny McCarthy, myself included, he's now become the, you know, sort of the arbiter of what is and isn't geeky, you know. And luckily, Chris is that guy, and he's a great guy. He's a very nice dude, and he's very talented and very funny. So it kind of works out that way. But unfortunately, what this shows is that, oh, I'm a geek too. Everybody can be a geek. You know, I saw that chick from Annalise McCord, I think is her name. She's on 90210 now, and she was on Nip Tuck for a while. And she was on Conan O'Brien talking about, oh, I'm a huge geek. And in this one, because they showed in this one episode of 90210, she dressed up as a Avatar chick. Yeah. You know, she was all blue. And I'm like, you're not a huge geek. First of all, you're in your 20s. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much of a huge geek you think you can be being so young.
Well, you can be. I mean, I'm sure I was a geek in my 20s.
Yes, but you know, that was back when
I would have paid you as a player.
That was back when you could be. The thing today when kids, you know, like I look at the guys on Beauty and the Geek. Mm-hmm. Remember that show, which yes. I thought I was a big fan of. Those guys truly were geeks for all different reasons. You know, one guy wrote poetry.
That, by the way, that's the heart of it. Because when somebody on TV says that they're a geek and it's... they mean exactly the same thing as the last person who's not really a geek.
Right.
For example, here's a famous person who was a geek when they were growing up, and if they said that they were a geek, true. Tina Fey.
Right.
Unpopular.
Virgin.
Belligerent.
Right.
Hard to be around, opinionated.
She's even said herself she couldn't give away her virginity. She was in her 20s when she lost it.
And certain that she was right, probably was right, but in an argumentative way for the longest time that wasn't very helpful for her social life.
Right.
That would be a classic kind of a geek,
And again, that is right in time with what geeks do. You know, you look at successful adult geeks, almost to the letter, they were unpopular, unsuccessful children. Mm-hmm. And or teenagers. And it wasn't until they entered the adult world where people stopped judging you on your appearance and your social graces and judged you on other more important things.
And when they came around and went, maybe I'm going to not act like such a shit all the time. Like,
maybe
a little of both.
Maybe I will take a shower. Maybe right. I will ask somebody if this jacket looks good on me.
Yeah.
I mean, shit like that. I mean, we all knew the geek in high school who was just a geek because... nobody fucking liked him. You didn't want to be around him. Comb your fucking hair. And that's half the battle. I mean, yeah. I said that all the time. You know, I wasn't the typical geek in high school.
I remember your episode of G.I. Joe.
Remember that?
Hey, kids, comb your hair. I just gave the kid a comb,
and he's like, I like that.
Thanks, Paul.
Well, that was my whole character.
Now we know. Combing is half the battle.
That was my character on G.I. Joe, Pompadour. Remember me? I wasn't big in the battles.
You were the barber at the...
Yes,
on the base.
I was the G.I. Joe barber. Hey, I just got back from seeing Pompadour. What do you think, guys? Hey, it looks good. Nice job, Scarecrow, whatever the fucking guy's name
is. Your secondary military specialty was classified. Everybody always wondered what that was about.
Never came into play for some reason, though. They said if there was another season, they would have done it, but they canceled the show. I was a pretty cool kid in high school. Jim can attest. I made people laugh. Mm-hmm. I didn't dress like an asshole. I showered regularly. I tried to get along with people for the most part, much more than I do now. I think in high school I was way more popular than I am now. But then again, like Jim, on the other hand, who was 20 times funnier than me in high school, he fucking dressed like an asshole. He cut his own hair one time, looked like a dipshit.
Yeah, my mom. It was funny because it was just to teach my mom a lesson. She insisted that I cut my hair, so I cut half of it.
Yeah, to teach her a lesson.
I got a haircut, Mom.
He also spent a lot of money on comic books. He worked at Burger King. What else did you do wrong?
Maintained a solid hold on my virginity for a good
while. Wore golf shoes, not tennis shoes, wore golf shoes to school. You know, and sometimes would often act out. I remember that as well. You would act out in a way that a geek will.
Although, I will say that the times that I acted out, there was a kid in school who was, oh my God, had the funniest breakdown over the title of the first Star Trek movie.
Brandon, the kid's name.
Brandon.
The Motion Picture?
Yeah. Yes. He goes, I can't believe they call it Star Trek The Motion Picture. They should have called it like Star Trek New Frontiers, whatever he was saying, because he thought just calling it The Motion Picture was dumb. And the teacher goes, Brandon, you could talk about that later.
This is in the middle of class.
You can talk about that later. Right now we're talking about history. And we're just, but, and he just started to shake the way that you will, because I've certainly shook like that myself. I was like, I'm talking about...
You don't understand. Throws his pencil, and the teacher rightly goes, okay, go to the principal's office, because he didn't want any part of that. Yeah. And I remember this kid, he was overweight. He, you know, he wore shirts that were too small for him. They often had stains on the front because he just didn't give a shit. And that is a key component in geeks. And now, you know, obviously, if you want to make geekiness and nerdiness your life goal or your business, you can't do that.
So you're saying part of being a geek is not giving a shit, and girls who like don't eat any carbs clearly do give a shit.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And no hairs out of place.
I'm saying, you know, there's geekiness, there's the geeky interests, and then there's the geeky lifestyle. You know, the guy like the guy who, you know, his fucking bedroom is a mess because it's filled with computer components and dolls. You know, that he bought for action figures and fucking monster manuals and all that shit, you know. But he still has friends, and he's a good guy, and he has a good life, you know. And then there's the geek who fucking, you know, he doesn't comb his hair, he doesn't cut his hair, he wears glasses, he mumbles all the time, he has no social graces, you know. There's the different kind of geeks, but I guess there's a fine line. You get those guys, and you got a guy like Chris Hardwick who is interested in that shit, but he's also an entertainer, and he's, you know, and he likes to work out and stay in good shape. But then is when it crosses the line into where it's no good. And I guess what the reason I'm bringing this up is, where is that disservice coming from? Is it coming from places like G4, where they have attractive people and they throw them up and they have Olivia Munn talk about video games and how cool they are? And so young hot girls go, ooh, I want to be like Olivia Munn. Like, look at Bailey DeRocher. We're all fans of her. Yeah. You know, she's a beautiful young woman. Mm-hmm. She enjoys comic books. She enjoys comedy. Mm-hmm. You know, she's very geeky. She hates Olivia Munn.
Yeah.
You know, but she's also very talented. She does things that aren't geeky, like she's in commercials, and you know, and she acts, and she also does karate.
Yeah.
And she's a great cook, from what I hear.
Well, geeks do karate.
Not
they're
well.
Never any good at
that's though, what I'm that's saying. They sure. don't do it well.
Karate can be very geeky.
Yeah.
If that's like your whole identity,
but if you're good at
that, guy's a geek.
If you're good at it, that's awesome. That's not geeky. That's awesome that you can kick someone's ass in karate.
If you're good at Street Fighter, that's awesome. But you're a geek.
No, but that's my point. It's not. What's useful about being good at a video game? Being good at karate, you can literally save someone's life.
Being good at anything is impressive. But
I don't think so. I'm good at watching. I'm good at TV trivia. Who gives a fuck? I've been told my entire life. Oh, thank you, Tom. I've been told my entire life. Who gives a fuck that you know so much about fucking the Cosby Show?
You wouldn't have been on a game show if nobody cared.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was great for me, but why should anyone else give a fuck?
Well, people did. They enjoyed watching it. They thought it was entertaining. That's why that's why you had a show.
And here, 10 years later, guess what? Yeah. I'm epic, and that's all I got to show for it. But what is
because of your talent at trivia? That's not why you're fucking in the shitter now.
Why is it?
Because of your other talent of being a fuckstick. Like, that's the other thing. Is like, it's nobody rejected you for the fucking TV trivia. This is the thing. Let's say you went, who's got trivia questions, kind ladies and gentlemen?
Oh, I do.
Oh, I'd love to hear one.
Okay, who played Fonzie on Happy Days?
Oh, that's actually very easy. But we'll get a better question later, but for you, Henry Winkler, I met him, versus, all right, which of you cunts got a question for me? There's a difference between...
I do.
Yes?
Who is the son on Little House on the Prairie?
Oh, I think it was Go Fuck Yourself.
It was a great impression of me. Well, this is the question I'm getting to with all this, is where...
Oh, I'm sorry, it was Go Fuck Yourself, Ingalls. Ah, get out of here.
Where does this come from? Why do young people and hot girls and, you know, bodybuilders and people who aren't geeks and shouldn't call themselves geeks or nerds, why do they think they should do that? And why, like you said, why are people posing like that?
Well, it's not endearing to go, yeah, I'm awesome and I was always awesome. So,
I don't know. Look at the kids on Jersey Shore. They're wildly popular.
Complete douchebags.
Yes.
And they're popular, but they don't, they're the joke and they don't know it.
They're not liked. They're popular.
Some people.
No, they're not
like
popular. People like the show.
People want vulnerability. I mean, I used to do this blog post called "Pretty Girls Falling Down," and when you've got a hot actress
You don't want the hot actress, the relationship between the hot actress and the female viewers to be like one of superiority.
Right.
You want her to seem relatable and vulnerable. And so every movie with a pretty girl in it that was supposed to be remotely funny would have the pretty girl falling down.
Right,
you know,
right.
Julia Roberts, Hilary Duff, you know, Sandra Bullock. It's just like, oh, look at me, I'm human like you. And what that does to the viewers, it makes them think, oh, they're just like me and I'm just as pretty as they are.
Right.
And yeah. I think this is an extension
That's
of
why
that.
Why they gave Julia Roberts those giant teeth.
Yes.
Who gave her those?
No, studios.
No, I don't think so.
Well, it's like, well, you look at Julia Roberts, you look at Keira Knightley. When they're on talk shows, they will talk about like how small their boobs are. You know, like,
right.
Oh, I'm so insufficient in there. And, oh, when I was doing Erin Brockovich, they had to pad, you know, the shit out of my bra because
right.
I'm not built like her at all. And I think, you know, for PR purposes, saying that you're a geek is in line with that. Of like, hey, I'm not this unattainable, you know, beauty. I'm down to earth like you.
Right.
You know, it's like, it was friggin' awful with like, Cindy Crawford, when she had that House of Style show,
right.
She would really just go out of her way to pretend to be down to earth.
Right.
You know?
There's no way. She just can't. That's,
and I, by the way, I think they're wrong at that point, too, because with Cindy Crawford, I don't think anybody minded that she was unattainable. She was an ideal.
Right. Like, that was like her thing.
Yeah,
right?
She was
like impossibly perfect was her selling point.
And that's the part that bothers me so much is these women, because I don't care, even if they are geeks, even if they are stupid, even if they don't know
things.
Wouldn't
that be great if the girl on this man,
I am so stupid.
I'm just not bright.
But honestly, if they said, I'm so stupid, I never graduated high school because I went to Japan to be a model when I was 16, and I'm just a dumbass. I don't know math. But the bottom line is, it doesn't matter because you're so beautiful.
Yeah.
Nobody gives a
fuck. Yeah, but they don't know math, but they also don't know anime the way that they claim to.
Right.
You know,
that's what I'm saying. Why bother? Just say, yeah, well, I'm beautiful and I make my living being beautiful. I can also act a little and I sing and dance. So I do okay for myself.
Yeah, but that's not going to be like an interview that people respond to. You know,
man, I would. I totally would.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, that, like, the Olivia Munn thing I always found kind of ridiculous. Like, whenever her name comes up, there's always somebody waiting to crawl out of the woodwork to say what a phony she is. And my reaction is always like, I don't fucking care. She's hot.
Yes.
I don't know her.
Like,
she's just a person on TV. If I knew her and she was, like, always trying to pretend to know things she doesn't, that would be annoying. She's just a person on TV, a presenter on a television show that has subject matter I'm interested in. I don't fucking care if it's an actor or
Tom,
not.
Tom, I question
She's a television personality.
I question your status as a geek. That's terribly reasonable.
Here's my reality show. You take all of these hot girls...
It doesn't matter if she's posing or not, because she's not real.
No, it does matter if they're posing. You take these girls and you kidnap them and you throw them into a classroom and you give them a geek SAT test and you see what the score is and you post it all publicly.
That's one of the things I liked about Beauty and the Geek, because these women who got by on their looks, and some of them, they almost all, every one of them to a woman would admit, yes, I get by on my looks. I don't read. I read magazines. They asked one girl, who wrote Claire de Lune, or, you know, who wrote the whatever waltz? And they're like, well, I don't read a lot of books, she says, not realizing it's a work of music.
Yeah.
But they made the point saying, you know what, girls, there's more to life than this. And by that same token, they said to the guys, there's more to life than science. There's something to be said for knowing something about fashion. There's something to be said for, you know, being able to talk to another human being and be funny.
Mm-hmm. So start distracting yourself, scientist who might find a cure for something.
No, but you know what? If you spend 24/7 in a lab trying to find a cure for cancer, you may miss out on other things that will help you find a cure for cancer.
Like skinny jeans.
Like skinny jeans. Like life, for criminy's sake.
Come on, you're a big House fan. You know the importance in any kind of scientific endeavor of having random conversations that accidentally jog your eureka
case
moment.
In point.
That's true.
Seeing a woman's red thong underwear and realizing why she's sick.
That's true. If your brain works like Holmes,
is that real?
Works.
Yeah, that actually happened on an episode. Wow. He knew that because this one was attracted to the color red, she had this particular kind of disease. True.
Whoa.
I swear to Christ. And also because she was constantly hitting on him and she was way too young. He's like, well, she has an increased libido and she really likes bright red things. Oh, I think she's sick.
And he was bummed out when he realized it, which was great, actually.
But she was way too young for him.
I love House, but it was only in that episode that he ever expressed the notion, she seems too young for me.
Mm.
It was the only episode where he ever would have went, this seems like a morally dicey area to have sex with this young girl. I mean, if I was paying her, that'd be one thing.
Right? Yeah, he all of a sudden...
If I didn't have a TV show, that'd be one.
Well, I'll say this. Chris is a friend of mine. He's a nice guy, and I've talked to him about being on the show, and he said he would do it, so hopefully we can get him on soon, and we'll talk more about this Nerdist thing, and we'll talk about, he's shooting his pilot, I think, this week, and Craig Ferguson is the guest, and, hopefully the Nerdist empire grows, and the people are more open to, nerd-related
stuff.
You're
still watching Ferguson?
I never was watching Ferguson.
Oh, really?
No, okay. I don't watch Ferguson. It's not that I don't like him. He's just not on
my radar. It's exhausting.
I mean, in terms of, relating Chris to but let's face it, I do think he is not a poser. He genuinely knows stuff. But if he was not creating this Nerdist empire, he would be a better geek than he is. He would know even more.
That's true. It's true. If he, like you said, if he was taking the time. But I think about, look at the shit Chris did before. He was the guy on Singled Out, then he was the guy on Shipmates, and it wasn't until he kind of he embraced his love of music and did some great stuff with Hard and Firm, mm-hmm. And he was in the Rob Zombie movie, then he's in Terminator 3, mm-hmm. and just kind of bopping about, and it wasn't until he said, I am going to take what little, cachet I have mm-hmm. and focus it on this thing that I think is really cool, mm-hmm. and started with his podcast and his website. And, of course, because he has access to big celebrities and he has some money saved up, he was able to make it explode into a big thing. And, I think he did the right thing. I say, congrats. I wish I had saved my Beat the Geeks money and was able to parlay it into something great. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's hard to save $200 a week. All right, before I stop talking, I want to say I watched this documentary, Conan O'Brien Can't Stop, this week. AT&T UVerse was showing it for free the other day.
Oh, that's cool.
And I watched it, and it's fucking great. And anybody who likes Conan O'Brien or comedy or documentaries or hates Jay Leno should watch it.
Or stopping.
Or not stopping. Or if you can't
stop. If you
hate
stopping.
If you hate stopping or if you like stopping. Either way, you should watch it, because it's a great documentary about him going out. There's two very telling moments. There's one where he says some dude came up to him and said, hey, my friend tried to get your autograph the other day, and you totally blew him off. And Conan goes, and I said straight to his face, that's not possible. It's as if he told me that somebody levitated off the air and went into off the ground and went up into space. That's just simply not possible. And you get the impression that it's not. Because he's the nicest fucking guy. And he's constantly talking about how he's so tired from doing all these shows, but he can't stop saying hi to people and being the good guy. At one point, they want to have a birthday party for him. And he's like, really? I'd like to just go back to the hotel. But no, he has to show up at his own birthday party and be gregarious and entertaining. And there's the press there. And Steve Croft is there doing his fucking story on him for 60 minutes. And Seals is there, and the two of them want to do a fucking number, Seals and Crumbs. But it's a good fucking documentary, and it's really funny stuff. The best part is there's no Jay Leno bashing, except one point when he's tired as hell and he's reading a fake telegram. He goes, oh, look, we got a telegram from Jay Leno. Dear Conan, what's it like having a soul? And everyone laughs. And that's the only thing he says. And I thought, wow, this could have easily been a documentary about how he got fucked. But it's not about that. But what's amazing is the people he meets. At one point, they're stopped at a fucking gas station. And he's like, why aren't we going? What's going on here? They're clearly there for a reason, but he doesn't know. So he just gets out to go talk to people. And he meets this family in a van. They're like in New Mexico or something. And they're just a family on their way to somewhere. And this woman, like the grandmother of them, goes, it's really terrible what happened to you. I think, you should know you didn't deserve that. And he, of course, goes, oh, it's very sweet of you to say, but, I'm fine. Don't worry about me. Because he knows enough to keep it in perspective. But the best part is the woman says, well, I want you to be safe on your journey. Do you mind if we say a prayer? And he joins her and her whole family in saying a prayer to keep Conan safe on his bus tour. And he's taking the time out to let this woman say a prayer for him. And I think, holy fuck, he really can't stop. This guy can't stop being Conan O'Brien. And it's amazing. I mean, I don't know. I watch Jimmy Fallon every night. And it always catches the end of Leno. You know, and it's usually a band of some sort. And I watch the end of the band who I go, wow, they suck. And then he comes on and goes, ah, thanks a lot, band who sucks. And I wanted my thanks to Jonah Hill and If Guy and Mario Batali and all the other douchebags who were on my show. And I look and go, don't they know they're standing next to the devil? Don't they realize that me and other people in the world go, oh, you're on Jay Leno? Fuck you. I will not go see your new movie because you don't have, you know, like comedians, I think if you're an unknown comic or whatever and you get a chance to be on Leno, you're going to take it because it's stage time, especially these days.
Unless you're the unknown comic, you're already famous.
Or unless you're Andy Kindler because you will never go on Leno. But it's hard to get. It's hard to get a break. If you're a band, you probably don't keep up with that shit. You just want to be on there and do your stuff. But, you know, if you're Chris Elliott, you know, if you're Jason Bateman, if you're Jonah Hill, a guy who supposedly is in the know about comedy and you're supposed to be the hipster and the guy who everybody looks to, you're sitting there on the couch talking to the devil.
Like, it can't hurt them as much as you're saying. I mean, their representation wouldn't let it happen.
No, if it
wasn't having a positive outfit.
It's a professional outcome obligation for them.
But how can you go, like a guy, like Jay Leno will never have Norm MacDonald on. Never in a million years. You couldn't pay him enough money to have Norm MacDonald on a show because there's no way you can stop Norm MacDonald from saying something about that. The first thing out of his mouth is going to be, hey, where's Conan O'Brien? Didn't you screw him out of a job? And he's going to fucking go after
him. What would Jay say?
Jay would go, hey, that's pretty funny. No, I'm going to talk about your new show. Oh, yeah, my new show is originally called Sports Show with Conan O'Brien.
No.
But I fired him and took it back. I took it over. Yeah, that's a hilarious gnome. Well, we'll be right back.
My favorite part of that interview was when the first guest, Tony Danza, interjected.
Yeah, remember?
What do you make a reference to? What are you talking about that, Norm? I don't understand. I feel like there's a backstory. I'm missing.
Yeah.
You remember when Conan took over the show and then Jay took it back like a month, 2 months
Wasn't
later?
Wasn't that the week that Shatner took over as band leader?
Oh, you actually said Shatner, not Captain Kirk for a change.
I was debating.
Oh, yeah. All right, we'll be right back after this. Over to you. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, that's all you
get. You know
what
I hate that Jay Leno does for every single guest? You know, someone's promoting something that's horrible, you know, that's just ridiculous. I mean, you know, pick anything. Be like, yeah, you know, when I first saw this thing that you were promoting, I said, oh, that looks really silly. But, you know, I did see it, and it was actually pretty good.
Terrible.
You know? It's just every...
Terrible. He's, you know, and like, Letterman...
After the first million times, does he still think it works?
And I've heard, you know, people say that you go on and you're talking to him, telling your story, and he literally will start to look past you. Like, he's looking behind you to see what's going on somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Because he's just not fucking paying attention. I don't get it. And it has nothing to do with the fact that he was a dick to me. All right, anyone else got any topics? We're at the hour and a half mark.
Oh, we should just mention, because Tom and I listened to it, Weird Al's album dropped.
Alpocalypse, right?
Alpocalypse.
Yeah. Yep. I downloaded it illegally. It's very
good. Which is,
good.
Probably better than the Alpacalypse, but that has more sweater potential.
Alpaca lips? You make sweaters out of alpaca lips?
Fur. The alpaca lips is when the world will be overrun by alpacas.
You guys remember my Weird Al impression?
It's a very obscure South American prophecy.
I was doing a Weird Al impression the other day. I forgot what it was.
Why'd you ask us if we remembered it? We weren't here.
Oh, I thought I did it for you guys, but maybe not. Oh, I think I did it last time. It was Weird Al. Closing slime! That was it.
Oh.
Right?
Yes.
My Weird Al
impression. I didn't remember it.
Yeah. But now you do.
Yeah.
For a minute. And then it'll be gone again.
The Doors song is probably my favorite.
Craigslist?
So yeah, Craigslist is probably
it's
my
good.
Favorite.
I was
Tom's observation about the Doors song.
My observation was that if he really wanted to nail the Doors feeling, it needed like a 6-minute organ solo.
And I would have loved that if he would have committed to that, but that's not Weird Al style.
I was I found myself actually laughing at the song that's like a Queen style parody,
mm-hmm.
just at the details of them parroting Queen, like just some of the little flourishes were just so perfect.
That's my favorite.
That was actually making song. That was just making me laugh at the music was making me laugh because it was capturing Queen so well.
See, my favorite song in this record is the Charles Nelson Reilly song because I heard it and went, "This is hilarious." And then I saw the video and went, "Oh, they're parody. This is a White Stripes parody." Yeah. But I'm not familiar enough with their music, so I play it for Brooke, who's Jack White's her dream. He's number one on her list. And she goes, "Oh yeah, it's a parody of this song, which isn't really a popular one." But I was like, "Oh, that's fucking great." But what I love the most about the Charles Nelson Reilly song is younger fans of his go, "Who the fuck's Charles Nelson Reilly?" They listen to the song and go, they watch the video. "I don't recognize that guy at all. I have no idea. And he's dead." So it's not like you can look up stuff, you know. I mean, maybe you see old clips of him, but he's not doing anything recently.
You can't even look it up. They take that stuff off the internet
once you're dead. Oh, yeah. That's good. Well, that's the answer for the next time I do something.
I also quite like the Jungle Cruise song, the song about Captain.
Oh, that one's great. That one's very sad.
But people who know me will know that I find the Jungle Cruise hilarious anyway.
Really?
So. Yeah, no, I've been fascinated with the Jungle Cruise for a long time. My theory is that all the disgruntled employees at Disneyland get shuffled off to the Jungle Cruise. Because everybody on the Jungle Cruise is always like, "Oh, okay, now here's something you don't see every day, the backside of water."
But I do. That's my favorite
joke. You know, tigers can weigh up to 500 pounds and leap up to 20 feet. Up here on your right, you'll see a African bull elephant. You know, bull elephants can weigh up to 500 pounds and jump up to 20 feet.
And then I always like to go, "Gosh, how close are we to the shore?" And he goes, 15 feet. I always love to help and assist the guys in their jokes.
One time, I was at Disneyland with a couple friends of mine, and as we were going around, I kept leaning over to them and doing the jokes right before the guide, and at a certain point, she stopped the boat and just stared at me for like for like 30 seconds, and I was like, "I think I should probably stop."
Yeah, you gotta sit in the back if you're gonna do that shit. I
wasn't doing
along.
It loud. I was like whispering. I was just saying it to my friends, but she clearly heard me and was like, "All right, yes, I'm on the Jungle Cruise."
Well, like when you go by and he goes, "And here you see the famous Schweitzer Falls." I like to go, "Who was that named after?" And he goes, "Albert Falls." I fucking love to play along.
Oh, you being that
I'm his straight
being
man.
The straight
for the
man
guy.
Is great. What would be great is if you decided, let's say you were nuts or more nuts or whatever, and you were like, "You know what? I want them to hire me. I'm going to do this all day."
I ride the Jungle Cruise all fucking day.
Yeah, because you're trying
long.
To get them to notice you, and they will
That's
notice
fucking
you.
Great. You go up to the end, and here's Bob the Headhunter. Oh, does he have any deals for me?
He's got
yes,
a two-for-one special today. Two of his for one of yours.
That sounds... Hey, wait a minute. I fucking love doing that.
You have a hat for that one. Hey, wait a... So the ruffly hat bit that you do.
All right. Any other topics that anyone wanted to bring up?
We don't have to talk about it, but Love Bites, Greg Grimmer's show that he talked about when he was on our our show, has been on for a few weeks now. NBC kind of started airing it without telling anybody.
So yeah.
I think they're up to four
episodes. I watched
episodes.
The first episode. I was underwhelmed.
Yeah, it gets a little better. Okay. But if you're interested, you could probably check that out on Hulu. So
Love Bites with our good friend Greg Grunberg from Heroes. Anything else?
There's an interesting thing talking about Hulu of, you know, there's a big problem with piracy of anime, of people making fan subs and showing the episodes, you know, sort of prohibiting, like, Cartoon Network or, you know, a cable show to translate the show and bring it over here if everyone's already familiar with it. And what Hulu has done is they've taken anime shows and subtitled them immediately, so they air 4 hours after they air in Japan. Wow. And I saw one called Tiger and Bunny on Hulu, which is exclusively available.
I'm
going
to start bringing a fucking bucket to these podcasts.
Why? So you can throw up in it?
I'm going to pee every fucking time.
Well,
now.
We're almost done. All right. Maybe you don't drink so much soda before you get here.
God, I'm an old man now. My fucking bladder.
Pee before you get here.
There's a weird situation with Viz where they were doing Rumi Takahashi's current series. Like, they were putting it up on the web in English at the same time it was released in Japan. And then after the earthquake, for some reason, the company told them to stop doing it, and mm-hmm. they've been waiting for permission to start again. And for some reason, they can't get permission, so they just periodically keep posting these blog posts that say, "Yeah, Renee's still postponed. We don't know when we can start. We don't know why we can't start." It's like It's like they got told to stop. Nobody seems to know why.
This is what show?
It's a manga called Renee.
And what was the company you said?
Viz.
And I understand nobody beats them. Is that correct?
Sure.
Is that the deal? Nobody beats the Viz? Is that right?
What are we doing now?
A German version of that commercial. Nobody beats the Viz. Anything else?
Well, where can people see stuff of yours?
We already talked, but let's face it. Yeah. Comicsandcomics.net.
Follow me on Twitter, @ComicJimBruce.
Yes, and you follow the show, @PaulGoebelShow. And, of course, please check out the new site, thekingoftv.com.
Great site, by the way. Thanks, kudos. Thank you. It's very nice.
When did it launch? Because I checked a few days ago.
Just today.
Okay.
Literally, just today.
Yeah, I saw your tweet.
And he also designed, if you want to see other work of Dave's, he also designed Proudly Resents. .com, which is Adam Spiegelman's movie podcast, which weren't you a guest on that? Talking about old dogs? Or maybe they just talked about you.
I think they just talked about me talking about old dogs.
I was a guest on it. I know
they've invited me to do the show a couple times, but it's always been like, can you come over right now?
Yeah.
And if I could, I would, in a heartbeat, of course.
He also designed the Proudly Resents site, so it's pretty good stuff. Anything else before we wrap this up?
Bring us to Chicago on Facebook.
Yes, if you want us to come to Chicago, go to the Facebook page, bring the Paul Goebel Show to Chicago.
We're stalled a little bit right now, so.
Join the site, and we'll come there, and we'll find a theater, and we'll do some comedy.
Yeah.
All right, Jim, do your mashup, and let's rock this town inside out.
All right, hold on. Let me remember which one I wanted to do. All right, okay. Hey, Bert. Did you want some of my half of my cookie?
Ernie, what did you? No, that's not what it is. Ernie, the hell did you do to the apartment?
Oh, well, I don't know. I thought it was like sharp corners, and I just thought I made it look more foreboding and kind of dark. Also, I brought in a new Muppet that I think should be here because very talented Muppet.
That's not a Muppet. That's Helena Bonham Carter. You can't have her in everything. What the hell is wrong with... Why am I cussing on the... Why am I cussing? I get
it. So it's not Bert and Ray. Or Everybody Loves Bert, right?
Although I wish it was, yeah.
I know what it is. Do you guys know? Tom?
Yeah. I do not.
Tom Frank, you don't know.
Yeah.
Nope.
Do you have any idea what he was referring... Obviously, you got the Bert and Ernie part.
Yes.
Do you know what he was referring to with the... The sharp corners and Helena Bonham Carter in everything he does?
Some Tim Burton movie?
Right. So if you put those two things together, what would it be?
Tim Burton and Ernie.
There you go. Yeah. Burton and Ernie.
That's right.
Burton and Ernie is what it was.
Well, I guess everything is Ray Romano.
Well, everything's shitty, yeah.
No. Hey.
Wow. I like Everybody Loves Bert. I think that's pretty funny. Bert! Damn it, Bert!
Ernie!
Would you go pick up those kids? I'm gay.
The documentary on Ray Romano doing stand-up? Like,
yeah, the 20,000 Miles to Go or whatever it was.
Was it any good?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's not like it's revealing, because from what I understand, there was a lot of stuff in it that he said, I don't want that to be in. Because I look like too much of a jackass. Like, there's one great section where
those are words never spoken by what's his face in Comedian
Jerry Seinfeld.
No.
Oh, Orny Adams.
Yes, Orny Adams.
Yeah. But there's one scene where they're on the road and he has to take a crap, and he's like, "But I wish I'd done it before I left the hotel." It's like, I don't want to use a public restroom. So they pull over to a motel. He rents a room. Goes in there and takes a shit. And and I think to myself, boy, that's expensive just to take a shit. But then again, if I had Ray Romano money, I might do that.
Yeah.
Because that's nothing to him. It's not like they checked into a Four Seasons for him to take a shit. Yeah. They just checked into
a little motel. Yeah, but the difference, of course, is that if you might do that just because you'd think it would be a lark to do that. He does that because of a compulsion,
right, but
of course.
But I think how great is it to be able to have the kind of money where that's not an issue at all. It's not like he blew a lot of money on a Ford. He just said, you know what? I don't feel comfortable pulling over to this Wendy's and shitting. I'm going to spend $50.
So that made the movie or that didn't?
That was in the movie. But that's like the most weirdest thing he does. And like, you know, the mind bet thing he talks about on his new show on Men of a Certain Age, where he makes mind bets with himself. That's in the show. Like at one point he's playing golf and he says, if I don't shoot whatever today, I'm going to send my clubs back and I won't shoot anymore for the rest of the tour. I won't play any more golf. And he doesn't. And so he ships his clubs back home. And he makes these bets with himself. So he calls them mind bets.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of related to the pretty girls, you know, calling themselves geeks.
Yeah.
Like, how weird do I want to let my... How vulnerable do I want to let myself
say? Well, I guess... I mean, it's an interesting documentary just because it's like him and his friend doing... Because it's not like he's on tour. They're doing private gigs for a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like they go from place to place. It's only a few gigs that he decided, well, I'm going to tape this. But... From what I understand, I heard this from like a third party. There was a lot of shit that didn't make it because he was like, I can't put this in. It makes me look too stupid. It makes me look too crazy because he's still trying to get work. And obviously he's doing the show. He's not like, he doesn't have Jerry Seinfeld money. He only has Everybody Loves Raymond money. I feel very bad for him that he only has the Everybody Loves Raymond
money. That's such a great moment in Comedian when Seinfeld is telling him that he threw his whole act out and is starting again. And just,
telling Leno?
No, telling Ray Romano.
Oh, okay.
That he's started from scratch, and Ray Romano just gulps. Like,
yeah.
Goes like, I could never do that.
Yeah, and even Leno goes, you're not going to do it. You're gonna do your old stuff. You'll go back. And he fucking did.
Funny, though, that you got that kind of a comedian, but then you have a guy like Louis C.K., who his whole thing now is just constant reinvention. Like, that's a non-issue for him in the way he does it.
Well, I think it's a thing with, because... comedians now of Louis C.K.'s caliber, because the big thing is to get your own special on HBO or on Comedy Central, and once you do that, you can kind of write your own ticket for more stuff, and you have to you have to throw out your own act. Jerry Seinfeld wasn't doing it. George Carlin used to do that every time. He would do a special.
Well, George Carlin, you think about the wealth of work, that's fucking ridiculous compared to any other comic. It's just
crazy. Yeah, I mean, but he would throw out that material. I mean,
I'll go on record as saying Carlin was a pretty good comic.
Really?
Yeah.
You're going to say that?
Well, I'm kind of a comedian geek.
That shouldn't be the default. You know, different comedians are different. You know, Stephen Wright couldn't do what Carlin did.
Nope. Like, I remember Jim and I went to see Stephen Wright when we were in Arizona. He told the same joke twice.
Wow.
Yeah.
In the night, because of the kind of act he had, not only did he not throw away the material, he repeated it in the same night. I remember Jim looking at me going, and I thought, wow. Like, Jim was like, I can't believe he did that. And I remember thinking, I guess that's going to happen when you're doing an hour and a half show and you're the guy.
Is when you're doing three shows a night, and then the third show, you've been tired the whole week.
And it's Tucson, like, Arizona.
And you're mixing it up. Because you're sick of your act,
yeah.
And then in the third show, you can't remember what the hell you've
but
done.
But I'll never forget, by the way, and she's nobody now, nobody cares anymore, but I saw Paula Poundstone in Arizona, and I saw her all week because I could go see shows for free. I didn't have anything else to do, and I saw her do different shows constantly, and I've never seen anybody who was as good with crowd work as she was.
Yeah.
That was back when she was lesbian, right?
No, I think that was back when she was in the closet.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Comedians. I'll say when we went, so I remember when I saw George Carlin, he started off reading new jokes. He started the whole show with saying, I got some new stuff here. And he pulls out a card and puts his glasses on and reads a few, judges the crowd and goes, okay, thanks. Takes his glasses off, put the card down. He goes, now let's start. He did his whole fucking actual show.
It's a hard position to be in, to be so famous that you have to write that amount of new material because everyone knows your act.
Yeah.
But it's also a luxury, you know?
It really is.
It's also like, okay, I have no choice, you know? I've really got to write new material.
Yeah. You know, Peter Falk died this week, which is, you know, kind of sad. And I think it was Paul F. Tompkins who said, I'm the marquee of the Laugh Factory now. Peter Falk. Make asking God just one more question. But I wrote, did you see my tweet about it? I said, Peter Falk, rest in peace. I always loved Lieutenant Columbine. Which fans of the show understand that joke. My mom goes on Facebook and corrects me. Columbo, she writes.
That is awesome.
And I quote underneath there, I put,
hold on,
that's my mom.
Wow. Correcting the king of TV.
Yes.
About Columbo.
Yes, she thought, the thing is, you can't think that's a typo, because that's like, I typed three wrong letters when I should have typed one. So that's a pretty big fucking typo. So clearly she thought I had it wrong.
How come you didn't open the show with this? This is the best story of all.
Because my mom listens to the show, and I thought by
this time
she
would have
tuned out. Well, anyone who saw it on Facebook was like,
oh,
wow,
I have to
crazy.
Say, by the way, I was like, for a while, I was trying to think of, for my mashup, I was like, well, I'll do a little tribute to do my look, Columbo. And that idea that that would be a tribute made me laugh and reminded me, because, of course, what a grand way to honor Columbo
sure.
by me going, eh, mame. But, and it reminded me of the Graham Elwood thing when they would do fog.
Stupid singing thing. Yeah, Graham, I'll tell this story. Graham and Tim used to do this fucking stupid thing they called scatology, where they would, the two of them would do like a cappella singing. But it was shitty because they're not singers, and they thought it was funny that they were doing it shittily.
And it could actually be kind of funny.
And it wasn't even scatting, because they would just sing snippets of songs and pat their knees. And they would scat, and they would go
zweedum boda zweedum bada zweedum bada
right.
and try to like match each other, which is what you do in scatting, by
right.
the way.
And I hated it because I thought it was just, first of all, I thought it was unfunny.
They would always end with zweedum bada free ride.
Yes, I hated it because I thought it was unfunny, and also because they always took it really seriously. They refused to admit that they were just fucking around and being idiots. And later on, Graham told me, he said, the reason we do that is because we have to take it 100% seriously, otherwise we'll laugh and we'll break, and yeah. because we know we're dicks. And I was like, that's fine. But at one point, it was shortly after Mel Torme died, and they said, this is dedicated to the Velvet Fog. And they did it, and I was so pissed! And I was like, how dare you guys? It's one thing to get up there and be fuckheads and disrespect music in general, but you fucking dedicate your bullshit to Mel Torme? I go, that's like me going, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to do a dedication to old Blue Eyes Frank Sinatra. Ready? 2, 3.
Did this at our show because he was so mad he did that exact Blue Eyes joke, and I fucking died because it was the funniest thing to me. And I loved that they wouldn't break, because I was like, somehow Paul doesn't know that they're just idiots. This is so awesome.
I was so mad, but it got my point across.
It reminds me of the Police Squad episode where Leslie Nielsen is the comedian.
Oh, that's so great. That's my hometown. Yeah.
Joe Dante directed that one. And but he does like Judy Garland.
Yeah.
But right. in like the video, they couldn't get the rights to the Judy Garland songs, like on the videotape release.
Oh, really?
So it's like Judy Garland-ish sounding songs.
Ah, that's hilarious.
Yeah. And the whole audience crying in unison was so great. That was a brilliant episode.
I mean, that is like one of the most insightful episodes about show business.
Yeah.
You know?
It's good stuff. Police Squad. Good stuff.
Still on?
No. They had to cancel. When Leslie Nielsen died, they canceled. All right, that is the show. Go check out comicsandcomics.net. Check out, what's the website called?
Jim Bruce Comedy.com.
It's confusing because it has comedy.
Well, it's ironic, I think. The title's ironic. Check out thekingoftv.com. And Tom, what's your net presence?
None.
You have an email.
I have an email.
That you don't like to give out.
Right.
But that's it, right?
I very occasionally post on AV Club, but I won't tell you my username.
Okay, don't. Tom Frank is probably one of the few people who knows what your email means. We'll ask him after the show.
Yeah,
because I never knew what it meant for a long time. All right. Thank you very much for listening, and don't forget to go fuck yourself.
Respect. He stood 8 foot tall, wore glasses, and he had a third nipple on the back of his neck. He ate his own weight in coal and excreted diamonds every day. He could throw you down a flight of stairs, but you still would love him anyway. Yeah, you know you love him anyway. With two flat tires and a missing chain. He trained a rattlesnake to do his laundry. I'm telling you, the man was insane. He could rip out your beating heart and show it to you right before you died. Every day he'd make the host a match game, give him a piggyback ride. Yeah, 2 hour piggyback ride. To his back. He could eat more frozen waffles than any other man I know. Once he fell off the crack of the building and he barely even stubbed his toe. Had a tiny little scratch on his toe. Didn't even hurt. Whole. He'd bash your face in with a shovel if you didn't treat him right.